This is my yard now.
Barack Lesnar! I'm not finished with you!
Jinder Mahal Maharaja!
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the moment you've all been waiting for. Finn Martin, David J. McCutcheon, Sandra Ruth, and Kenny McIntosh bring you the audio goodness that is Inside the Ropes. 7 days, 7 podcasts for the biggest party of the summer, SummerSlam.
Hi everybody, it is Saturday, the day before SummerSlam, the day of NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 3. I'm Kenny McIntosh, and I promised you an original recipe Inside the Ropes. And what that means, obviously, is a solo podcast with me, because I'm the one that created Inside the Ropes. Now, I know that there's been a big dispute online, because the man that used to be known as Robert Duffin, who is now not allowed to use that name because I own the rights, he demanded more money, a lot more money, and I don't really like his lifestyle and how he carries himself. He tarnishes the good wholesome name of Inside the Ropes. So he's gone. I tried to work with his lawyer, BB Glazer, and she just kept coming on to me, to be honest. So that didn't really work out. But it's just gonna be an hour with me. So I'm gonna take some Twitter questions. I'm gonna talk a little bit about SummerSlam. I might even read a poem from my estate.
Listen, you marble mouth fuck. Nobody wants to hear you flapping your gums for an hour. And if anybody's reading poetry on Inside the Ropes, it is moi.
I don't know how you've got on this line, sir. But
I have. Hey, if the Russians can hack the election, I can go on to Kenny McIntosh's Skype line. That's what's happening here.
Well, I mean, and the situation hasn't changed. You.
Well,
you've been terminated.
I have not been terminated. Like Schwarzenegger, I am back. There is no termination.
Are you also doing YouTube videos calling Trump a Nazi?
No, that's just my Twitter. Anyway,
right, okay.
Anyway, there has been new evidence unearthed.
Right.
I have passed it along to BB. And I think you'll find it quite compelling, Kenny McIntosh, because anyone who has listened to Inside the Ropes for the last number of years, mm-hmm, they will know that the origin story, you know, it's as famous as Peter Parker getting bitten by the spider in terms of classic origin stories. And the origin story is that on a rainy night in a flat in Partick, me and you were alone. You tried some stuff. I was like, not my lifestyle. But then we decided we watched Monday Night Raw, and I think it was the episode where Kane came back with his mask on.
Flashdance mask, yes.
Flashdance mask, yes. So you remember now. And we shared a Domino's pizza, which we split 50-50. Mm-hmm. And that was not the only thing that we split 50-50 that night, because we wrote up the charter of Inside the Ropes on the back of that legally binding pizza box. And since I have recently moved, I was unearthing things, and I discovered that pizza box. Now, it does not smell good.
I wouldn't imagine it would after 5 years.
Smell good. It doesn't smell good. And also, somehow, the grease has not erased the ink. I don't know how that's happened, but that has happened. And that is a legally binding pizza box. And on the pizza box, it states that we have 50% each controlling stake in the Inside Network, because that is what we foolishly called it back then. And therefore, the legally binding pizza box now sits on my shelf next to the Kamala bowling ball. And
which you never used.
Yeah, I got like 12 months to use that thing.
Okay.
And I'm not going to do a Baron Corbin test.
So
I'm not going to throw that Kamala bowling ball down the runway and then be disconnected from the call. That's not going to be happening.
So basically, so, I'm stuck with you again, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Oh, unfortunately, I could use my name and everything. All legal rights are reverted back to me. So you're not pulling any fake Diesel and Razor shit on the people. You saw all those happy faces in the community. Yes, most of them were from David J. McCutcheon. Okay? Most of them were from him. But if he's the only one that enjoys this, then I'm okay with that.
Well, isn't this a big happy fucking ending? Isn't this the big, everybody gets what they want, Robert Duffin's back. And you know, they all go, oh, you know, Robert's the best, right? And it's like, right? Everyone thinks Brock Lesnar's the best, because he's never fucking around.
Well, that's
I'm
good.
Here.
Also, look,
I'm here day to day, holding up the fucking structure.
Shush. Yes, you are doing that, yes. And you do that very, very well. Anyway, put yourself in my shoes. How many times am I going to check my fucking notifications only to find out that once again, there's an Inside the Ropes host, fuck, marry, kill. And well, in terms of, you know, it's a fucking holocaust on this side, I tell you, because I don't survive that a lot. Now, I don't get anything nasty. I do tend to get people going, I've only been listening for like the last sort of year or so since it got really popular, so I don't know who you are. So I just have to kill you by default. But those kills, they hurt. They cut deep.
I can imagine. Well, I mean, I guess if you know what, I am nothing if not fair. And if people want to hear you, I will put the differences aside, and we can have a clean slate.
Okay, let's do a pod.
Okay, fine. That's fine.
And we'll go out in front of the people and we'll give them what they want one more time.
So
everybody and Deck hate each other in real life.
Well, I can never remember which one's Ant and which one's Deck, even though they apparently stand the way that it should be all the time.
Which one's the one that's like an alcoholic now? Because
Deck's...
Maybe that'll help us tell which one's which.
So obviously Shawn Michaels is now coming to him with Inside the Ropes. Are you going to turn up at any of those shows, or?
No? I'll have to check my schedule, see if, you know, Shawn Michaels, we partied in the 90s. He might not want to see me again.
That's true. Well, so it's SummerSlam weekend. Have you been...
Actually, what I really... I know this can't happen because he can't take any vacation, as our American... brothers and sisters say, but I would love for David McCutcheon to finally get his picture signed so that he can sort of let go of that bad blood that
So for what anyone doesn't know, Shawn Michaels, when he was in the 90s, met David J. McCutcheon, and what was the story again? Like, Shawn told him to fuck off?
Well, I think what happened was, I'm sure we'll get the correct version if we get this wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was like a glossy photo, and Michael's in a sort of drug-induced haze.
No.
I would imagine, not guaranteed, just, you know, don't sue me. I've just sank all of my personal fortune into suing Kenny. So I think that he signed it with maybe a pencil or something. It basically didn't sign up. It didn't show up, sorry, on the photo. And then I think David or maybe his mum said something to Sean, like, I think it was David. I think he said, like, you know, this isn't, you know, it's not signed properly or whatever. And I think Sean said, fuck off. So, you know, it's not a great experience for a young person to have with someone that they may have looked up to in some ways. But maybe we could make dreams come true. But really what I would want to happen is for him to sign it and then, like, they'd have a hug and then, like, Shawn Michaels would super kick David. Like, turn on him right at the end.
That would be sensational.
Crotch chopping over this prone figure on the ground.
So what have you had a chance to watch any wrestling? Have you had a chance to catch up on it? What have you seen? What have you enjoyed? What have you hated? Fill us in.
Well, obviously, I exclusively watch New Japan now because all WWE is for pedophiles.
Here, can I just, so very quickly, just to publicly say this. So one of our listeners, who I won't name by name, right?
That's not true. That's actually not true. By
so
way.
He put a status up, and I actually understand where he's coming from. Because there is this New Japan Pro Wrestling wank fest that goes on a lot, right? And when you're not somebody who watches New Japan a lot, you're like, all right, calm down. Because like, sometimes people are like, I mean, it's no Okada Omega, you know? Or like they'll bring up Tanahashi, or they'll bring up...
Someone else you can remember.
I was going to say Chiabata, but that's the sandwich. Shibata.
Akira Tozawa.
Whatever one.
All the greats.
So anyway, and he had put this post up, and it wasn't the most eloquent of posts, right? It was basically like...
I would say it was... If he was trying to...
I think initially he probably was trying to antagonize.
He was trying to be quite virtuous in his retorts to people later on, but I think it was a classic example of somebody who maybe was overly aggressive in the first instance and then tried to sort of go, just trying to have a conversation. And I think that didn't work too well for him. He had some interesting points, but he, you know, approached them with the subtlety of a wrecking ball, I think, for some people.
He did. Now, and then it kind of escalated because, like, the problem, like, so, I'm trying to make an example of something that I just, if you and I, we talk about a movie, like, I'll give an example. I detest Christian Bale as Batman. I hate it. And I'm a huge Batman fan. And it annoys me that he's, like, heralded as this, you know, best Batman of all time. I hate the voice in The Dark Knight. It ruined the movie for me. I can't watch it. I just find it takes me out of it too much. I just don't like it, right? And I can happily have that conversation with anybody. And if you disagree with me and you like it, I'm intrigued, actually, by listening to what you think. Whatever, back and forth. But it seemed like, for this young gentleman, that people were just like, you know, no, you're wrong, or whatever. And it went on and on, and it was back and forth with people. And then, through a couple of things, he ended up kind of leaving the Facebook community because he was just like, he just kind of had enough of people kind of getting on him. Which he started, so, you know, but I felt quite bad. But I do just want to say in his defense that while a lot of people love New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I don't dare say that it's not good, but to say that the sun shines out of his arse is not maybe particularly true. For example, some people will say, oh, Raw's too long, it's 3 hours. The G1's 46 fucking weeks! The G1 is every day for
the
weeks.
Big commitment. Yeah, it's a big commitment.
So you can't sit and say, oh, well, WWE, I mean, I really, that third hour of Raw was a slog. You know, like, that ninth day of the G1 was a slog. Yeah. You know?
Day 12 was, I'm starting to get a bit sleepy. I think the thing with it is, it sort of caught fire, I guess, over the last, 2 years maybe, and then this year it seems there are more and more people. Like, I remember when we did whichever Wrestle Kingdom was being presented by Global Force in America.
Yeah.
That's what Jeff Jarrett does when he gets mentioned as well. I remember we had, Jarrett was on the podcast, basically. And I think maybe Jim Ross was as well.
Yeah, I think he was.
But anyway, I don't really remember some of the regular listeners whose names still crop up now on Facebook and Twitter being as attached to them as they are now. So I feel like it's safe to say in the last 2 years it has grown in popularity. A lot of the people come over, a lot of the stars of New Japan come over to the UK as part of like the Rev Pro Tour and stuff. So people have got to see some of these guys in action, and they've got a following, which is brilliant. But it has that classic kind of vibe to it that unless you're playing very fair, I guess it can be quite difficult for some people to not become that person. It was like when in 2000, I would say, like, remember the year 2000, just to pick up on another film comparison to follow on from your the Christian Bale thing. That was when the DVD label Tartan started releasing Asian horror films in the UK. Uh-huh. And so we were suddenly flooded with, like, The Ring and Dark Water.
The Grudge.
And The Mirror and The Grudge and all that kind of stuff. And they were all coming out. And suddenly, you know, everybody who was into that was like, fucking nothing else counts. You know, Battle Royale is the greatest film ever made. And it's like this Japanese thing and you've never even seen it. Like, what shit are you watching? So I think that's kind of like, that happens, you know, in all types of pop culture, there are these things that people find somewhere else and they latch onto them and they sort of adopt them. Not everybody, some people just watch it and enjoy it. Like, that's absolutely fine. I know people just watch it and enjoy it. But some people can't help but sort of bring it in as part of their own kind of personal identity and they get very attached to it. And I guess it's something different, and maybe if people are starting to get a little bit fed up of one particular type of pro wrestling, then they find that more enjoyable, and some things can be drawn in by the exotic of difference. You know, I watched Wrestle Kingdom in January, did that show with David, and I loved it, but I know that a lot of it had to do with it. I'm sure if I'd watched New Japan for like 7 years, I would have been probably less enthusiastic about it because I would be used to that sort of thing, but it was,
I guess,
you know,
it's like,
different, and like, so I can see why people get enchanted by it. And but yeah, it's a little bit annoying when it becomes like the hipster wrestling.
I think for me it's more like, because I like some of New Japan stuff, like I really do. Like, I watched Finn Martin and I a couple of weeks ago watched the Cody Rhodes Okada match in Long Beach, and it was excellent. I loved it. I thought it was great, and I really like, who knew Cody Rhodes was that performer? Like, who knew that he was able to main event this New Japan show, and it was quite compelling to watch. But I think the problem for me is that what annoys me is, like, you know, it's a SummerSlam weekend, right? I think the card looks pretty decent.
It's not
the best card ever, but you know, I think there's a fair few matches that have been built pretty well and whatever. But I think the kind of the cool thing now is to just kind of go, WWE's shite and New Japan's the best, and it's like, but they're so different, you know? They're completely different things. And I think somebody made the point, I think it was Innes, actually, who runs our community. God fucking bless the guy. But, Jesus Christ, Innes, I don't know how you do it.
Have you ever seen that episode of Futurama where Bender gets launched into space and this tiny planet starts forming on his body? And he's initially, like, quite a benevolent god, and he tries to create harmony, but then the two kind of sides start having like a war across his body. If you've not seen the episode, that probably makes no sense, but that's Innes.
That's Innes. But he made a really great point, unless somebody else made it and I'm just attributing it to Innes, but fuck it, he deserves it. Was talking about that maybe part of why people find New Japan so much more compelling than WWE is that you don't really consume New Japan the same way that you consume WWE. You know, like, we're about to talk about SummerSlam weekend for probably about 45 minutes, where we're going to speculate on things, we're going to analyse things, we're going to blah, blah, blah. But you don't really tend to do that with New Japan as much. Because it's...
Yeah, because there's not like a whole industry built around... Well, I mean, there are podcasts and people talk about it, but nobody's like fucking, oh my god, Tanahashi's on the EasyJet flight to Tokyo or whatever. Like, you know, nobody's doing all that kind of stuff. So maybe it's a purer experience at this point. But, you know, enjoy what you enjoy, but you don't need to be like, you know, you can think that it's better, but, you know, I don't know if you need to look down on people, because...
Yeah, I think it's more just to kind of like, you know, just because...
If you pity them, just pity them silently.
Yeah, exactly, because, like, just like what you like, and if somebody else doesn't like it, like, if you were to say to me, I think, like, the amount of times that somebody said to me, I think Hulk Hogan's rubbish, I've never liked him, like... It doesn't. I'm not going to like fall into a pit and cry. Like, you're allowed to not like someone, you know. It's just people like different things. But anyway, so what else have you been watching? Have you even told us anything you've watched yet? I don't know how we got to that New Japan thing.
Oh, because you asked me what I've been watching, I made that crack about I'm only watching New Japan now. I've just been keeping up with the regular WWE stuff. I've not really been watching. Well, I watched the weekly show for a couple of weeks. I watched Raw and SmackDown for a few weeks when I was on holiday.
Anything jump out at you, good or bad?
Good or bad. good or bad. I'm trying to remember. I didn't really retain very much, clearly. A questionable thing for SummerSlam is maybe, I don't know if I'm a little bit tired of the Kevin Owens and AJ Styles thing.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it on the main podcast. Like, is it just that, like, sometimes there's two wrestlers that wrestle and it's just not as exciting and amazing as you think it's going to be?
Maybe. I mean, like, I saw their pay-per-view match. What was the pay-per-view?
The first one they did was Backlash in May, the one where Jinder won the title, and then they did one at Battleground recently.
Right. It would have been Battleground. Yeah, it was Battleground that I watched. I saw that one. And it was just kind of like, it was okay.
Isn't it weird that, like, it becomes more interesting with Shane McMahon as a referee? Like,
yeah, oh yeah, nah, it's all coming back to me now, right, okay. As Celine Dion once said, it's, had the finish that everybody was all like, was it a mistake? What happened? And then they did the title switch again the same week and blah, 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 and Kevin Owens got angry. Yeah. New Day and Usos was great though, wasn't it?
Saved that pay-per-view.
Yes, it did.
So I want you to tell me, you're watching live, I'm assuming, Battleground, or you're watching it, you're watching it without knowing what's happening, or what's going to happen.
Yeah, oh yeah, right, okay, sorry, I should have warmed up a little bit by actually sort of trying to remember anything that happened in the last 4 weeks of television, but yes, I did not know about what you're going to ask about, I assume.
Yes, so you're watching the show. And you're, you know, considering taking your own life during Jinder and Randy Orton, like the rest of us.
Oh my god, it was absolutely fucking brutal. Like, and not in the way that you wanted it to be. That was such an appalling match.
Yeah, it's terrible. Terrible.
Anyway,
so
we're beating a dead horse.
I want you to talk me through. Randy Orton is climbing part of the structure, which apparently, according to him, Bring It to the Table, the word structure was used 64 times.
I just hadn't. I mean, I think I must have seen a joke or something. I'm sure somebody must have joked.
So Randy Orton's climbing this cage, yes. And all of a sudden, Jinder's music hits.
Yes.
Take me through your immediate thoughts from there.
Right. So I had no idea about Kali. Right. I might have seen a joke about the Punjabi prison. Kali's going to turn up, but it didn't stick in my head enough for me to assume. So when his music hit, I was like, there's not someone else that hangs about with these guys, is there? And then, is there someone else? And then I was kind of like, maybe they're going to, like, do that thing where, you know, WWE have a history of just going, well, they look vaguely like they're from that place.
Yes.
And who's the cruiserweight guy? Name's escaping me.
Mustafa.
Really good.
Arya Divari. Mustafa Ali.
No, yeah, I was thinking of Mustafa Ali. I wasn't thinking of Arya Divari. And I was like, maybe they're just going to bring him out and be like, ethnic bros together or something. I was like, what? Because it's so racist. And then Kali walks out and I was genuinely flabbergasted. The only time I was more shocked in my life by an appearance from the great Kali was when I did that podcast with you about his career. And I think that I was actually happier to see him at Battleground than I was for his name to come up when we did that podcast. I was so excited that the Neutrogain Killer was there. And it just made me laugh because he's so rubbish. Like, he's just... he's rubbish. And he's wandering... Well, I say wandering, you know. He looks like, underneath those Aladdin pants, he's got, like, two wooden pegs. So he's, like stunting his way down to the ring. I keep expecting like one of his legs to break in two and he goes down into one knee. Anyway, so he gets down there and, you know, I'm fairly certain in the time that it took him to get to the Punjabi prison, Orton could have scrambled out, but, you know, dramatic license. So then he sort of climbs up it and
weren't you quite impressed that he actually got up the structure?
No, I think King Kong got up the Empire State Building quicker than fucking Kali got up the Punjabi prison. But it was, yeah, he got up there and he knocked Orton down. Orton took that kind of, he was shaking it. And Orton took that scary tumble where he looked like he was going to fall. That was quite well done. And then he grabbed the belt and everything. And I genuinely, there was photos of the four of them. And I sort of thought, you know what? If he's going to hang around and it's going to be like an Indian bro stable and Callie's going to be there, then cool. But that's not really happened. It was a sort of just a one-night stand with the great Callie.
As God intended it.
Yeah, which was a shame. I was quite... but it's not a shame because he's rubbish. But he does add that.
What you're trying to say, what you don't want to say, is you were genuinely kind of, oh, I was looking forward to him hanging about.
Yeah, because I know it would be like, it would just be really wonky, and I think that we're past the point of the gender thing feeling that sort of legitimate way. So I sort of laughed when I saw the interview you did with him, and I assume people listening have seen it. But when he started talking about people beating people clean, I was like, can you say that? Is that not an insidery thing? Like, would you say that as a, you know, would you boast about that? Like, yeah, beaten clean, brother. I don't know, maybe you would. But, yeah, a little bit sad to see the one and done with Great Khali.
The thing is, like, there's nothing, I'll always remember when he grabbed the belt like he was the champion. It was just the most Khali thing that he could do.
For that moment. For that one glorious moment.
So what we'll do in this podcast, I guess, is kind of talk about some of the NXT stuff, some of the SummerSlam stuff, and just kind of see where we are. At the end of the show, we are going to have an interview with Finn Balor that I did yesterday, so that's going to go up.
Wow, two handsome men on the podcast.
And Robert Duffin.
I walked right into that, didn't I?
You did. Before we continue those, a little bit of good news. Ric Flair's agent has just posted an update on Twitter today, and she said, out of respect for family privacy, there's not been an official Ric Flair update. It's led to false information. Don't believe everything you read. Happy to report Ric is awake, communicating and progressing, but there are complications, so he needs rest for the first time in 40 years. He did cut a promo on a nurse yesterday, so anyone that knows Ric knows that's a very, very good sign. On behalf of Rick, thank you for the outpouring of prayers and well wishes. Although the offers for a kidney seemed a little excessive, the man outlived a plane crash and being struck by lightning. He is a survivor, grateful for all the love and respect sent Ric Flair's way.
That is really good news. I was really sad to see those updates from the past week suggesting that things weren't looking too good for him. And I saw there was a sentiment that I saw, and I was, on the one hand, I get that it seems a little bit. Because I saw someone say, I'm just not quite ready for Ric Flair not to be around. And, of course, the sort of, you know, horrid sort of cold response to that would be, well, nobody's ever ready for anyone to pass away, you know. But I saw that and I kind of went, yeah, I'm not really either. I'm not really ready for the world to not have Ric Flair in it yet. So that is. That's really good news.
I was going to put a tweet out and I thought it was actually going to be a little bit tasteless. I didn't do it. But
that's personal growth for you.
But I've made like a pact to myself that if he gets better and he's up to it, we need to bring him over. Like, we just do. Like, it would be great to, you know, just have a Ric Flair show and have him be Ric Flair and...
We'll need to get like a slosh fund for the bar.
Well, that's it. Like, maybe like now he's gonna have to drink less, so maybe he'll just drink like, you know, a normal alcoholic rather than like a football squad on a Saturday night.
Ric Flair,
one and only. So obviously it's SummerSlam weekend. Tonight is NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 3.
Yeah, we've got three years
in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center. We've got Johnny Gargano against Andrade Cien Almas with Zelina Vega, formerly Tia Trinidad in his corner, Aleister Black versus Hideo Itami, Sanity versus the Authors of Pain for the tag titles, Ember and Asuka for the women's title, and Drew McIntyre, our boy, going up against Bobby Roode for the NXT title. How are you feeling about this card? Are you excited? Is there any match you're looking forward to? Any general thoughts?
I think I'm probably looking forward to Asuka versus Ember Moon the most. I think that's maybe the one that I'm most invested in. I've enjoyed the sort of months-long turn of Asuka. I'm not really sure if Ember Moon is the one to take it away, although history would suggest that you know, once a record is set, i.e. the New Day's tag title record, they do tend to, well, they broke that very quickly after it, didn't they? They set the record and then did they not lose the belts like within 2 or 3 weeks?
Yeah, it was very quickly. I think it was, it was the same week or like, yeah, it was very, very quick.
So I know that they did the Asuka streak and Goldberg tweeted her and stuff, and they didn't. And that was a little while ago, but they don't defend that title as often. So kind of like maybe this is it. But you sort of go, is she the right person to take it? But then is there a right person? What if, you know, people just get bored with it if they wait too long for the obvious person? I don't know. Just depends on how they tell it tonight. But I'm probably most looking forward to that. Not really sure about the Drew Mack and Bobby Roode thing. I don't know. I think one of the problems with the NXT Championship is that the title switches are always so telegraphed. You know, they're very rarely a surprise.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe Bobby beating Shinsuke was maybe like, oh, okay. Maybe not see that happening on the first go. But it's usually very obvious when it's someone's time to like move on.
It kind of feels like. I mean, the thing with Bobby Roode is that it does feel for me like it's time for him to move up.
Yeah, but I just don't really know. You know, there's that kind of crop of guys that are in there now that the online, it's all like, well, these guys are not being brought in to like eventually go up. They're just here to like make NXT look good. Like they said that about like Eric Young. I think they said it about Roddy Strong as well. It's sort of like, oh, we don't really know, we're just bringing them into NXT and not necessarily graduating up to the main roster. But I don't know, I just wonder what would happen to Bobby Roode in the main roster. I don't really know.
I mean, it feels like there's going to be, it feels like, you know, they want to make SummerSlam this big weekend. It's kind of like, you know, feels like WrestleMania a little bit. And
yeah.
I get, like, to me it seems like we're going to get a call up or two right after SummerSlam.
So maybe Roode on SmackDown?
Yeah, maybe Bobby Roode on SmackDown. I mean, I know he's got the thing with Roderick Strong, so maybe that keeps him down. But then, you know, we've seen in the past that you can put somebody up and then have them still do something in NXT for a little while to kind of finish it off.
Yeah, I think that what I was going to say was I don't necessarily think that the title switch is that flagged here. I know some people are really behind McIntyre getting it, and maybe that will happen, but it doesn't feel like an obvious one where you kind of go, yeah, okay, right, Neville's definitely losing it this time and he's going up to the north. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I can't say that uncertainty is necessarily translating into a real interest in that match. I'm not sure. It may be great. Maybe it will be great, but I don't know.
And so, I mean, TakeOver, obviously, I mean, the other big thing for TakeOver is the suspected front row appearance of Adam Cole.
Yeah, Adam Cole.
Now, how do you feel about Adam Cole? Because I know that David's not a huge fan of him. I hadn't really seen much of his stuff, and then when he came to WCPW earlier this year, I kind of, you know, was watching his stuff, and I thought he was pretty good. I quite liked him, but what do you think of him?
I'm not sure. I kind of feel like, So once the sort of Danielson and McGuinness era of Ring of Honor ended, like, you know, those guys left, went to TNA and WWE respectively, and well, in the end, things didn't work out too great for either of them, sadly. But They had that kind of vacuum in Ring of Honor, and people started to try and fill it. And they did this. It was you know, you had Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards, and they had like Richards had proteges and stuff like that. And you had all these people coming out. So you had like Kyle O'Reilly, Adam Cole, other people I'm sure that whose names I've forgotten. And he was just never, Adam Cole was never really the one that I was that invested in. And then all the stuff that seemed to make him popular, I kind of thought came from other people, like the Adam Cole baby thing. I'm like, well, that's kind of been done. And like when he went into the Bullet Club, I was like, yeah, okay, I guess it makes sense. Like, yeah, he would be the obvious person to point to do that. So I'm not sure. I'm not as enthusiastic about it as I was about... I really like Kyle O'Reilly. So, like, whoop. Glad that's happening. But Adam Cole, yeah, he'll probably... Yeah, I'm sure he'll do the ringside thing and everyone will go, ooh, and wave and blah, blah, blah. We'll just wait and see what happens. I'm willing to be turned around on him, but I'm not like, yeah, Adam Cole, woo. I don't know.
Well, there's a lot of guys now in NXT where it's kind of indie guy number five, you know, like Bobby Fish, O'Reilly, like...
And I don't even know if... I mean, Adam Cole's...
Which is interesting, because I feel like Aleister Black, he actually feels like... I didn't watch a lot of Tommy N's stuff, so maybe this is just me. Maybe that's why it works for me, but he feels like an authentic new character.
He doesn't feel like Man in Pants number four. And he's got quite like a unique look, which Adam Cole's like very much, you know, when you got WWF Attitude in the N64 and you were like, oh, I'm going to meet this guy, I'm going to give him like Bret Hart's hair and a little goatee beard. And I'm just, I don't know, he just always kind of like, oh yeah, there's, he looks a bit generic. But I'm sure he'll impress. I hope he'll impress. I'll remain optimistic about it. But it is becoming like a super indie fed, isn't it? Like all the guys are there.
Yeah, it's getting there. Who's
going to wrestle for GFW?
So let's talk about this, because I've not talked about this anywhere else yet with anybody, so... Like, there's things that have shocked me before, but Jim Cornette has turned up in Global Force Wrestling. And, like, from what I know of Jim, I feel like part of why he's doing it is because Christine Jarrett, who's Jeff Jarrett's grandmother, was the one that got him into the wrestling business. And I know that he feels a very, very big loyalty to the Jarretts because of that.
Okay.
So maybe, like, he just feels like, you know, he wants to... help and try and make things better, and that's all well and good, but I just wish he wasn't there. I watched it yesterday and
I've seen it,
and there wasn't much of a reaction. And I don't think there wasn't much of a reaction. I mean, he got more of a reaction than most people do on that show.
Yeah,
but
I can't believe that fucking thing still exists.
I know, like, it's just and then you've got like, because I'm, and then maybe part of me thinks, because Cornette was quite vocal about, you know, what they did to the Hardys, and he wasn't happy about it. So maybe he is coming in to try and change things, but...
Maybe.
I mean, I assume he's only an on-screen character right now, so if you're an on-screen
character... Well, I thought he was... I mean, Cornette's a great promo, and he's much better than Bruce Pritchard. So, I mean, at least they've got that going for them if he's going to be coming out doing the authority, quote-unquote, stuff on GFW. But I was sort of surprised. I mean, you've got a direct line to Jim. Could you get in touch and ask him if Jeff's paying him in gold? Like, does he send one gold bar a month via FedEx or something?
I did think it was quite funny that when he debuted, or when it got spoiled that he was debuting, that somebody tweeted and said, how much money did Jeff have to pay you to come and do that? And he was like, there was a lot more zeros on it than the numbers at Trump's rallies. So fair play.
Fair play for doing it, but I just feel like that.
You know, sometimes.
Do you remember when? Right.
It's like when one of your pals. It's like when you're out on a night out, right, and one of your pals sees a munter, right, and just goes,
"Yeah,
you know, I think I might just." And you're like, "Listen, do not do it. It's suicide."
We've all been there.
You're eating the gristle of the bone here. It's not good. I know you've been there, Robert, but, you know, there's... anyway, really good in-joke. But, and you kind of go, like, do not do it. It will not end well. And then they go, it'll be fine.
I'm in flashbacks.
And then they do it. And then... You know, they come back to you 6 months later and go, fuck, I should never have done that, should I? And you go, yep, told you. Like, I feel like that's what this is. Like, but, you know, I mean, fair play to Cornette. If he's able to help turn them around, I'll give them this. I'm intrigued at him being involved, and I'm probably going to watch the things that he does because I enjoy his promos. So if they wanted people to tune in, fair enough. But, yeah, fuck's sake.
Who's even there now? Bobby Lashley?
Their new champion's Eli Drake.
Oh. That sounds good. This is an odd reference, but remember the Sugar Babes?
I do.
Remember, like someone left and they replaced them, and then someone else left and they replaced them, and then it eventually got to the point where the Sugar Babes were like Trigger's broom from Only Fools and Horses, where so many of the parts have been replaced that it wasn't even the same thing. And when you look at TFW, I'm just kind of like, all right, so it's green now. Oh, there's that person. But I don't know what this is anymore. I don't even know what it is. I don't know what you are.
Before we talk about SummerSlam, I do want to ask you quickly, there's obviously the... I don't know if you've seen it, but the news that, like, at the Mae Young Classic, there was some sort of confrontation between the four horsewomen of MMA and...
Oh, yeah.
Are you keen? You want to see it?
Oh, 100%. That's like... They could main event WrestleMania with that. They absolutely could. What are we talking, like, Becky, Charlotte, Bayley?
Becky, Charlotte, Bayley, and Sasha.
And Sasha versus...
Shayna Baszler, Ronda, Roderick Strong's wife, I can't remember her name. I did this the last time. I feel really horrible.
I can't remember the other two either. So maybe they shouldn't headline WrestleMania. But I think it could be a headline match.
No, right, okay. So Ronda, Shayna, Roderick's other half is Marina Shafir and Jessamine Duke.
I think the
fact that Shayna Baszler is in the Mae Young Classic, Ronda has been apparently at Brian Kendrick's school. But I will say this, last night at the show with Paul Heyman and JR, I didn't get it on film, I wish I had, but somebody asked Heyman, would you manage anyone else now or advocate for anyone else apart from Brock Lesnar? And he kind of paused and he was like, I have no interest in advocating for anyone else. See Ryback, Curtis Axel. And he didn't say that. I added that in. But
okay.
He said, there's one exception. And everybody's kind of, you know, edge of their seat. And he said, Charlotte Flair. And he said, there's one condition. We main event WrestleMania with Ronda Rousey.
Well, I was going to say that, you know how you have, like, WWE is built around moments. We've been saying that for a really long time. And, you know, you get that moment in a big tag team match where two people get tagged in that you kind of want to see face each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the crowd, like, lose their shit. When I was watching the kind of the set to the Mae Young thing, and then I saw the interview with Becky that you did, and... That's the thing that I imagined. I imagined Rousey being in the ring and like someone tagging in Charlotte, and Charlotte just takes like the slow entrance between the ropes and just like staring her down, and just like the crowd coming unglued. And that in my mind, I was like, that is fucking huge. So yeah, I am all for seeing something like that happen. I hope they make it happen because I think it would be absolutely tremendous.
Yeah, I think it would be. And I mean, you know, you can always. You know, you don't have to have the four horsewomen of WWE. You can always take Bayley and Sasha and put Tamina and Lana in there, you know? Because we all know they're great. Do you know, it's funny.
Yeah.
It's funny. So we're doing all the media interviews yesterday. So just so you guys know, there's a ton of interviews come to the YouTube channel. We're going to have interviews with The New Day, Rusev. I know Samoa Joe and Becky Lynch and Jinder Mahal are up there. I think there's also one with Nakamura coming, there's ones with Dolph Ziggler, Nikki Bella, AJ Styles, and Seth Rollins, but there was one other interview that I had the chance to do, and I didn't do it, and it's not through trying to be like, I'm above interviewing this person, but it was Lana. Lana was there, and I was going to do the interview. I was genuinely going to, you know, I was in line waiting to do it, and I overheard her doing an interview with somebody else, and she was talking about, you know, where she is in wrestling, and I heard the interview and I thought, I couldn't sit with a straight face and do that interview. Because she's talking about, you know, oh, I'm really excited that the WWE Universe are going to be able to share my journey and see me improve, and like, you know, wrestling's my life, and blah, blah, and I'm like, oh, come on, you know? Like,
yeah.
There's, But then you watch things like on NXT, Sonya Deville, or I think that's how you pronounce it, and she's doing the MMA gimmick down there, or like Asuka, or Nikki Cross, or Ruby Riott, and you go, I feel like that's their life. They portray it to me like that is, there is no, I mean, we did that interview with Nikki Cross on YouTube, and I didn't know how well it would do, and each one did over 50,000 hits. And people were just blown away by her story. And it's like, I just don't get from Lana, and I don't mean it in a sort of accusatory way, I just don't get that that's her. And that's fine, you don't have to be this, like, you know, let me consume wrestling all the time. You know, Brock Lesnar sometimes can do it, but she's not Brock Lesnar.
They're like, Lana, let's talk about Killer Kowalski.
Which of the following three is actually a wrestler? Christian Bale. as you see how far she gets. So, yeah, the horsewomen thing is pretty interesting. I'd love to see it. Are you going to check out the Mae Young Classic?
Yeah, I think I probably will watch the Mae Young Classic. Yeah, I want to see Carrie and various other people. I saw a thing, actually. I just want to make one statement about it and move on. Because it's a controversial topic. It's going to bring a lot of heat to the table. But I did see that story that was shared on the community saying that there were people at the Barclays Center and they were going to be protesting because they want WWE to symbolically remove President Donald Trump from the Hall of Fame because they're like, be a star. And they're like, well, you've got like a bully and a racist in your Hall of Fame. And they're like, which one? you just want Trump out or like... I mean, look, obviously not a Trump fan, but Jesus Christ, like, the Ultimate Warrior is on record saying way worse things than Donald Trump, and he's still in there. So, oh, but he died, so, you know, we can't say anything bad about him. Hopefully, that'll be how Trump is redeemed. Anyway, and then they were like, look, we've got seats, like, we're in the building, so we'll, like, protest and stuff, and everyone's got an opinion about protesting and... you know, like an anti-Trump thing happening inside the Barclays Center. And all I'm saying is, look, if it gets Sami Zayn on the card, I hope he's there. Like, opening the back door, letting the fucking protesters in the back of the Barclays Center. Go, 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 go! I hadn't really considered this because obviously WWE have such close ties to Trump. Not the, you know... It's become very obvious if you follow any of the performers on Twitter who is of what affiliation. You know, you can kind of tell who the good guys are. And I'm actually surprised it's taken this long for something like this to happen. I guess maybe it's just because it's New York and things are particularly tense right now because of the events of the last couple of weeks. But yeah, actually, when the first thing I thought when I saw that was, oh, I didn't think, yeah, okay, wow, I can't believe it's taken since, you know, November effectively. For something like this to brew, where people wanted something to, or something to happen, or to make some kind of statement about affiliation with them. But
I'm interested because when we finish this, I've got like half an hour to kind of, you know, edit it together, and then we need to leave to go to NXT. And I'm curious if I'm going to see any of that. You know, what I'll also
I kind of think it might be a little bit minimal. I'm looking forward to the like, and like the crowd are like. Fire Trump. And then the commentary team are like, I think they're chanting for CM Punk because they would rather mention CM Punk on WWE television than acknowledge that the fans don't like the president. Linda McMahon is just a backstage with a bit of flop sweat on her forehead. Oh goodness.
Jesus.
Oh, Linda.
What I will say though is when I was in New York, there was one thing that I wanted to do while I was in town before any wrestling. And it was like
You went frowning in Central Park?
Fuck off. I'd seen it was on and I was like, I can't miss this.
Oh, you went to Michael Moore show?
Yes, I went and saw Michael Moore, Terms of My Surrender, it's called. And it's a show.
I know people have varying opinions on Michael Moore, but I've always been a big fan. I like him.
Yeah, I like him, and I understand that sometimes you can kind of go, you know, come on, you don't need to protest everything, because some people just don't want to be sort of, you know...
I enjoy that he exists.
Yeah, me too. So I was really keen to go and see it. So I ended up, like, the tickets were like $110, and I was, I was with Louise, who's like our merch lady, and she was really like keen to spend that amount of money, which I understand totally.
I don't love freedom that much.
Yeah, I love freedom like $40 worth. And so I was like, okay, well, listen, like, why don't we go to the venue and just see if we get any, like, you know, discount tickets? Like, you never know. And the guy was like, well, we have some, like, restricted view seats, which they're like $35. I've got two left. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And then we sat down. It was like row H in the stalls. There was no restricted view whatsoever. They were like the edge of the row.
Oh.
So I guess if you were watching, like, a musical, so if you imagine you're in the right-hand side, and you're on the end. Yeah. So, like, maybe if there was, like, a big musical with loads of set stuff, like, you'd miss some stuff on the right. But it's just him in the middle of a stage, so...
Yeah, it
was fine for us. And I don't know if I've felt more alive after a theatre experience than that show ever. It was one of the best things I've ever been to. It was just... He comes out, and he's got this big... sort of like, you know, screen thing that's like got the whole USA flag, and then it's got Trump behind him, and he tells stories. And two nights before we were there, he apparently just midway through the show said, right guys, you know, we have to effect change to have change happen, and that's why I'm going to ask all of you right now to stand up and head out to the front of the theatre, because there's two double-decker buses, we're going to Trump Tower right now to protest.
I paid my $100, but say some horrible things about the president.
So he told some stories, and there was a very funny bit where, like, he brought out, like, a suitcase and talked about the 59 items that you're not allowed to take on an airplane anymore. And some of them were like ridiculous, like, you're not allowed to take a microwave oven on anymore. And he's like, you know, there's a kid in the front row, and he's like, we used to take microwaves on the plane just to, you know, heat our food up because we didn't like the airplane food. Or, like, a machete or, you know, cleaver or whatever. And he's just making fun of it all. And he says, so there used to be 58 items on the list. And then, so the suitcase is on a table in the middle of the stage that had been, like, slid into the middle. And the suitcase is on the table. And he said, so there was 58 items on there in January. And now then a 59th was put on. And he opens the suitcase and he pulls a Muslim woman out of the suitcase. and then puts her back in.
Wow.
And... like, there was so, and then he told this great story about, he did a thing about, you know, he was talking about, you know, the Democratic Party need to get that together, and they need to, and by the way, sorry if I'm talking a little bit of politics, it's life, just deal with it. And he was talking about, you know, the Democratic Party, they really need to get somebody who's got their shit together, and then he was kind of building towards this bit, and he was like, Tom Hanks, Oprah, anybody, and then of course it led someone to shout, you should run. And obviously that's the bit he wanted, because all of a sudden part of the screen flipped round that was Michael Moore for President 2020. And right. He does this bit and he's like, if I become president, we're only going to have one fucking cord for all our appliances. And then he shows, you know, that if anyone's got a new iPhone will know this, that now, like, instead of, like, plugging in the kind of, like, headphones jack.
Yeah.
You now need to, like, put your jack into an Apple jack to then put the Apple... end into an iPhone. It's ridiculous. And so he's doing this whole thing, and then near the end he tells the story that he wrote a book in 2001 or 2000 called Stupid White Men, about guys like Rupert Murdoch and George W. Bush.
Yeah, I have a hardback copy upstairs.
And I never knew this story, but he was saying that originally it was supposed to be released on September 11th, 2001. That was the release date. And it didn't get released, and then it was almost, the book wasn't going to be published. I don't know if you probably know this story, but the book wasn't going to be published. It was basically going to be pulled. And then he went to this little talk in a little place in New Jersey, and there was, he read like two chapters of the book, kind of said, you know, oh, well, you know, nobody's ever going to get to see the book, so here's a couple of chapters. And he didn't know there was a librarian in the crowd that day, and she sent a message out to other librarians, and it escalated to a point where librarians picketed outside the publisher, and they had to publish the book.
Oh, and I don't think he wrote about that in the book. Well, I've...
No, he didn't. But then he said, guys, I've got a surprise for you. She's here. And he brought the librarian out on stage, and she sat down and talked, and she's an activist, and she was talking about, you know, what you need to do to make change, and, like, it was just a really, like, you know, invigorating show, because you're kind of like, oh, I could do something. And he was like, you know, if you're in the crowd, like, just do something, you know, like, run for office. He was like, you know, there's so many... you know, office roles in government in America where you only need to go to one meeting a year. and he tells so many kind of cool stories, and it was just a great show. So if you're in New York City this summer, please go and see it. It's a really great show.
Yeah, and he's a great live talker, actually. I saw his thing. He does, a lot of people do this thing with him when they write him off because, you know, like he made that film Fahrenheit 9/11 and it was sort of, let's stop Bush being re-elected. And then he was re-elected, so everyone went, well, Michael Moore's a failure. Like, he didn't actually stop it. The film is now not worth watching. And then similarly, he did a thing very last minute. I mean, it is kind of funny that like, Michael Moore sort of almost sort of disappeared for 8 years while Obama was in office and then had a stunning last-minute comeback when Trump looked like he was going to be winning. But he did this thing called Michael Moore and Trump Land where he went to, I can't remember.
I watched it. It was great.
It was somewhere in the south. Like,
Ohio, was it not?
I don't think
it was Wisconsin.
Was it not like a Republican stronghold?
Yeah,
he basically had a crowd of people in front of him who were very unlikely to vote Democrat. And I think that the fact that he was willing to like go out in front of that crowd and engage them and things like he's an engaging speaker and he's an interesting person. So yeah, that's really cool. I'm jealous you got to see that. That sounds like fun.
So he told this other story just for people who are maybe, if you're a Republican or a Tory and you're kind of like, oh God, you know, why am I listening to them talk about this? He told these stories about when he famously did the speech at the Oscars about, you know, our president sent us to war and all this sort of stuff. And he actually had people try to murder him. I don't know if people know this. But he tells the stories. Like, I had to have bodyguards and a guy made a homemade bomb to bomb his house. And the guy apparently, like, fucked something up and made a noise. So somebody, like, got to it before it went off. So he tells all these stories, but you're just like, you might not like what he's doing, but I mean, the guy's literally willing to get death threats and stuff to make his point, so you've got to respect that, I guess. But anyway, we're not here to talk about politics. We're here to talk about wrestling. SummerSlam is coming up tomorrow night. So I was just going to run through some of the matches and just kind of let me know what you think about the storyline or just the generalness of it all.
Okay.
So on the pre-show, the Cruiserweight title is on the line. Akira Tozawa, the tag team, the champion, is defending against Neville. Any interest?
Yes, because I think it will be a good match. I just wish that one of the best sort of title runs of the year, or if not the last few years, hasn't just solely existed in front of audiences that don't really care or on pre-shows. Like, Neville's been brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that him losing the title was somewhat unceremonious last week. It was like, oh, okay. Like, I guess it's going to happen eventually, but I just kind of wanted him to keep the belt forever. Just let him be the king of the cruiserweight forever. I think his heel work, his whole run has been so, so good. And he is a sort of big example for me of the real limitations of creating a division for these guys. Because I would like to see Neville mix it up with some other people in other places on the card. But, you know, he can't leave the confines of the purple ropes, I guess. I don't know. Maybe if he doesn't win tomorrow, maybe he can go and do some other stuff. But
swap him for Enzo.
And fire him into the sun.
I'm not going to go through all the matches here, by the way, because like we've probably got another half an hour we can do here in this podcast before I need to go. So we'll just talk about the big matches. The New Day and the Usos is also in the pre-show, which should be really good.
That'll be great, yeah.
The Hardys and Jason Jordan are going up against The Miz and The Miztourage. Good to get the Hardys.
Black son!
The Hardys and The Miz will be good. What do you think about Jason Jordan as Kurt Angle's son? Did you roll your eyes or guffaw?
I didn't roll my eyes or guffaw. I just kind of went, oh, okay, sure. Props to Kurt Angle for like crying and making the whole thing seem really realistic, I guess.
Tears were real.
I just don't know. He's a great wrestler. Like, I think Jason Jordan's a really good wrestler, but I've been more compelled by Chad Gable's performances on SmackDown. And I'm not saying I wanted him to be the son. I'm curious about their decision to do this. And I think it just kind of shows a problem within WWE is that they can create this sort of artificial story, which I don't think people are really going to buy. I don't know if anybody's ever successfully done this weird relationship. I mean, yeah, okay, Undertaker and Kane and what have you, but because like, it's the reality of the show, but then, like, what's going to happen? If they make, like, another Kurt Angle documentary, are we going to, like, pretend that he's his son? Like, I don't know. I don't really like that family thing. Unless it's, like, some mad supernatural thing like Undertaker and Kane, where you know it's a story and you just kind of go with it. But I think that in the reality era, it's a little bit much to swallow. And I don't know whether the forced nature of it is going to... It already seems like the crowd have sort of turned on him a little bit in some cities anyway. So I guess maybe the hope is that Jason Jordan is secretly... It's all a ruse and he's using Angle to, like, get himself up the card or something. I don't know. But Chad Gable and Rusev, like, that was shit hot when that happened on SmackDown. So... Yeah, Team Gable, I guess.
We've got... I mean, the Raw side seems to be a lot stronger for SummerSlam. You know, so in SmackDown, you get some kind of throwaway matches like Naomi and Natalya or Randy Orton and Rusev, which could be good if they're given time and Randy Orton's motivated. AJ Styles, Kevin Owens, we kind of talked about that. John Cena, Baron Corbin. I mean...
What's going to happen there?
John Cena's going to win.
You think?
Well, I mean, so Cena apparently is going to Raw for a month. As of Monday. So, I just can't imagine that you have Cena lose to Nakamura. I mean, because Cena's one of those guys he shouldn't lose all the time.
No, he shouldn't lose all the time.
So if he loses to Nakamura, it means something. I don't really see the... I just don't think Corbin is ready enough.
Did you not think that, just very briefly, I know we're kind of running out of time, but... I watched the Nakamura Cena episode of SmackDown. It was a really good episode of SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and they had it in fucking Fashion Peaks. Fuck me, greatest thing ever. Anyway,
have you seen actually very quickly? Alexa Bliss was doing an interview on the red carpet at the 2K thing last night, and the Fashion Police were there as correspondents for Up Up Down Down. And Dango's like got a police hat on with like a glittery jacket, and they just like circle Alexa Bliss, and they're like, "Is that your purse?" And she's like, "Yeah." And he's like, "As you were." And he walks away and Breez is like, "Good work, Dango."
Yeah, their fashion, I mean, the idea of the world of WWE and Twin Peaks colliding, it just felt like such a, like there was, I know obviously I know many people that like both, but it is one of those moments where you think, did they do this just for me? For me? And I love that episode so much. But the Nakamura Cena thing, that's the whole thing I was going to talk about. Did you not think that it was almost a more of a functional victory rather than something that felt genuinely special?
I think the biggest problem...
I wasn't really surprised that he beat him. And it was hurt. I think, you know, the ad breaks hurt it a little bit. It wasn't as long as maybe we'd like it to be. I thought it was a good, like, TV match, but there was something sort of, instead of it feeling like you know, like when Brian beat John Cena, or when CM Punk beat John Cena, or somebody else, you know, AJ Styles beat John Cena, it felt like this big, like, fuck, they beat Cena. And there was something about Nakamura's win where I just kind of thought, yeah, like, that was sort of, it felt more functional than, like, a genuinely satisfying emotional win. But, you know, I guess they just wanted to get that match in there before, you know, Cena goes away to make Bumblebee.
I think for me, the problem, what took me out of it, I mean, I actually enjoyed the match, and I'm glad that they did it, and I got to see it in some form, in case we don't see it again. But I think the problem was that they were both fighting for the right to fight Jinder.
I know.
Like, you just can't, fair play to Jinder Mahal for his bans. Right? Like, fair play. But you're still shite, pal. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I saw on the... I don't know what the results are now. I could look, but I'm not going to. In case it spoils my point. But someone put the poll on the community, and it said you had to vote for, like, the SummerSlam match you're most excited about. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's kind of... I mean, when you know who the opponent is, it makes perfect sense. But it is really sad that, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura is in a WWE title match at SummerSlam, and at that point, nobody had voted for it. And there was a lot of votes. Now, obviously, it's a multi-faceted thing. Gender doesn't help. A lot of people not invested and don't really care in his matches, so they feel like there's no point looking forward to something if the match isn't going to be good. There are still a lot of people who are a little bit lukewarm on Nakamura because they don't really feel like they've seen anything to warrant the hype that he arrived on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's go watch the match with Sami Zayn, you know, just saying. But we can't, you know, we can't keep dining out on all the victories, I suppose. But it's, yeah, it's just a bit of a shame, really, that Jinder is like such a weight. I mean, I don't even think that's just, I think anyone could be fighting him at SummerSlam and people would be like, eh, I don't give a fuck.
So, Jinder and Nakamura at SummerSlam, do you think, I mean, it's one of those weird things where, I mean, they have kind of locked into, I hate to give them any credit for this, but it is a compelling match in terms of outcome.
Is it that compelling?
Because is Jinder going to be the guy to beat Nakamura for the first time? You know, like, in New York?
Yeah, I suppose the crowd would be quite entertaining if that happened.
Or,
I don't think we're going to get a clean finish.
No, I would be surprised. I don't think Nakamura's going to win here.
When are they touring India?
I don't know.
Is it not later this year, or is that just something somebody made up?
They are touring India in September, apparently.
Yeah, are you really going to put the belt on the guy and have him blabber about how he's representing the 1.5 billion, blah, 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 and then have him lose the month before he goes to India? You know, it's probably not going to happen. So I think maybe Nakamura wins the match, but there's, like, you know, nonsense afoot that stops him from taking the belt, which is just such a... I mean, there's a part of me that doesn't want Nakamura to win it, because I don't really want his first... I want his first title win to be like a big thing that everybody's excited about, even people that are not necessarily big fans of his. You know, it's like a thing that everybody's like, oh, this is going to be great. But that's just... Jinder Mahal is not your guy, you know?
At all.
No.
So from there, we have... I think that Raw has done a really good job with their storylines. Like, I think that they're a lot more compelling for the most part. We've got the... On the lower end, there's stuff like Big Show and Big Cass. There's stuff like...
What the fuck? Did they, like... Are they contractually obliged to use that shark cage? Like, do they have to? Because they've got a toy?
I guess because they bought it for Paul Ellering. They're like, oh, we may as well use it one more time.
They used it in January, didn't they, for Jericho?
Yeah, so also did. So that's...
I thought it was because they've got a toy. Like, they've got a toy with a cage hanging over the ring, and I'm like, did they just try and trot this out as often as possible?
That's actually a very good point. That's probably exactly why they do it. I think you've just... But we've got Big Show, Big Cass. There's Sasha Banks and Alexa Bliss for the women's title on Raw.
You know what? I'm almost glad that that is now the match, because if it wasn't, the conversation we would have to have would be about Bayley, and that's just too depressing. So
you know what? Controversial. I don't think all the blame's on creative. I think some of the blame's got to be on Bayley.
It's just not working. But
I said to Sandra, and she disagrees with me, but I think that when you look back now, if you really think about it, the thing that probably hurt Bayley was the fact that the other three went up and she didn't for another year.
Yeah, that probably didn't help. That didn't help. They're also quite aggressively behind Alexa, which is, you know, just Vince's... she's like a blonde that he probably wants to fuck, so they could make her a big star. I know this is going to be an unpopular thing, but I don't really like her that much. I just think that, you know, she's got a mouth on her and like she jaws off at the crowd and like, that's cool, but I don't think it makes her, like, a great wrestler. I don't know.
I think that she's improved. I think
there's a lot of people that are like, oh, my God, she's the best. And I'm like, put your tongue back in your mouth. She would never touch you. I don't really know. I mean, she's fine. I don't hate her or anything. But I'm just like, I don't really like seeing her in the position that she's in, because I don't really think she deserves it.
I would argue the top three matches on the show...
are all from Raw?
Yeah, I think they are. Finn Balor, Bray Wyatt, I'm intrigued by your thoughts on this, because we've had the Bray Wyatt discussion so many times. Finn Balor is going to be the demon. Bray Wyatt has been eating the pies. What do you think about it? Is there any interest in it?
So Bray Wyatt's like doing some Gangrel shit now on Raw with his big like
bucket of blood.
His corn syrup paste. It looked like a fucking Italian giallo from the 70s or something. It was just weird looking blood. Anyway, I don't really care. I just don't really care about this. Like, I guess, see Balor doing the demon thing, he hasn't done it for a year, so that'll be kind of cool. You know, not seen that for 12 months, so that'll be fun. But as always, when that bell rings, you just don't know what you're going to get out of Bray Wyatt. And I am very concerned that given we've got Demon Balor, I'm worried we're going to get fucking ring mat maggots Wyatt. Like, I'm worried that they're going to go... I mean, Randy Orton was not a supernatural guy, and they did the crazy maggots. So now you've got two sort of spooky guys. So what are we going to get? The ring post, they're snakes! I don't know what's going to happen. But
Bring it on, I say. Bring us some mental stuff. Why not?
But those projections at WrestleMania were fucking garbage.
They were, but is that now your thing? You're just like, anything they do, if it's like that, you can fucking keep it.
I'm not a fan of that. But no, just it wasn't that it was... I'm all for the kind of pyro and... Balor, all that kind of stuff.
Great.
But it's I love all the supernatural. I love all the kind of, you know, everyone goes off Undertaker and Kane stuff, you know, throwing lightning bolts and everything. That's brilliant.
Is there an ideal scenario for something that they could do that would pique your interest?
With Wyatt?
With the match with Wyatt and Balor?
I just can't imagine what would be interesting about it. Bray Wyatt's like so boring. He is so boring. And it pains me to say it, but yes, he's really boring. And I hope that Balor can maybe get put into something more interesting before he gets invited to the fucking House of Horrors.
Oh God, the demon in the House of Horrors would be great. How do you feel? This is a story. I think if somebody had told us a couple of months ago that this was going to be an emotionally invested story for people, I don't know if we quite have believed it, but. The Raw Tag Team titles are on the line when Sheamus and Cesaro, who a year ago were feuding, and then it turned into one of the greatest love affairs of all time.
Yeah, they've been great. They've been so, so good.
And they're taking on Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins.
This stuff has been amazing.
Who've now reunited. I mean, wax lyrical.
You know, I've never seen so many people cheer when two men fisted each other. It was so exciting.
Just don't go to the right parties.
I have loved the stuff with those two because I guess it's that kind of payback thing, because I remember when they split up, like we all had things to say about Roman seeming like less bothered about it because he was like, I'm away from my main event push, I'll see you later. He was like, he grabbed all the Shield gear, the CD with the song on it, and fucking ran out the house. Like, see you.
I love the idea that that's what he did. He grabbed the kit bag,
the CD out the CD player, and fucking bolted right up to the main event. And it was Dean and Seth that kind of had to handle they had the fallout. You know, they had the long feud that lasted, like 4 or 5 months. You know, that like it went all the way up to Hell in a Cell. And it wasn't always great. It wasn't always a great feud, and not all the matches were great. But now you get to pay that off because I don't think... I know a lot of people want Roman involved in this eventually, which is fine. Like, I think if you're going to do the Shield, you do need to get him involved eventually. I don't really know if they're ever going to do them all wearing the same gear. And I don't know. I'm interested to see what they do, actually, whether they come out as the Shield on Sunday. I don't really know. I think they'll come out to their own individual musics. But we'll see. But the build up to these two guys like kissing and making up has been fucking excellent. I loved it. I thought it was really, really compelling. And I got the goosebumps when they finally fist bumped in the middle of the ring. And I think the crowd were with it. It was really great storytelling.
It was great. And so we now go to the main event of the show. Fatal 4-Way for the Universal title. This to me is maybe the best SummerSlam main event in years. Like, when you've got Brock Lesnar, Universal Champion, he's found his mojo again through Goldberg. Who would have fucking thought it? You've got Paul Heyman in the corner who's threatening for them to leave. You've got the aura of John Jones turning up because Brock might go back to UFC and fight them. You've got Roman Reigns, who apparently retired The Undertaker, but maybe not, because maybe Undertaker's in town. You've got Samoa Joe, who became a star and is the only guy to really legitimately rattle the beast in the last kind of couple of years, and he's taking him to task. And then you've got Braun Strowman, who's just a fucking godsend, who kills people. I mean, what a main event, right?
I think this, I don't necessarily want this to be long. I would be happy with like 15 mental minutes of just bodies and objects being flung to the wind. I can't wait to see this combination of guys go at it because individually they've all been really good in their different combinations. I mean, we never really had like Samoa Joe and Braun Strowman do much really, have we? But I think it's going to be, it's just going to, when one little bit finishes, you know, when two guys are finished doing their thing, we're going to be like whipping the camera over to see two guys do something else. It's going to, I think it'll be frantic and chaotic. And I'm really looking forward to it because, as you say, you know what, credit where it's due, because I have bemoaned the lack of compelling characters and interesting stories for a number of years. And to have a couple of different things going into this show, where it's actually the stories that you're interested in, like you're curious about seeing things, you know, even something as daft as what I just mentioned about, like, I wonder how the Shield are going to come out. Like, they're going to come out together? Like, even if they don't, the fact that I've wondered that has told me that I'm invested in it. And similar to this, I'm like, what the fuck's going to happen here? Like, I mean, he doesn't have to, as they keep telling us, he doesn't have to be pinned to lose the title, so this is a really good way to get it onto somebody else. But, and then there's so many other things at play, you know, because people assume that they really want to do the Lesnar-Roman thing at some point, and for Roman to beat him one-on-one and win the belt then, so maybe Roman doesn't get it now. Is Samoa Joe going to win it? Is Braun Strowman going to win it? Like, I think it's going to be genuinely exciting. I think there's a lot of elements at play, and it might kind of just look like an absolute, like a tornado to a trailer park by the end of it. I think it's going to be a mess in a great way.
And also, I think what's good is, like, Brock Lesnar matches tend to have shocking moments or shocking endings or shocking things happen. So I very rarely walk away from a Brock match disappointed. Like, I always feel like I get, like, you know, for people who kind of go, oh, I wish it was the way it used to be, the way with the atmosphere. And I always feel like with a Brock match, you get the atmosphere every time.
Yeah. Who do you think it's going to go with the...
I've said it for the whole week, so I'm gonna just.
I think either Lesnar's just gonna straight retain, mm-hmm. which will be fine, or maybe Joe. I don't really think it's gonna be Strowman. I don't know why. I don't really think it's Roman either at this point in time. But you know, the back end of the year before you start getting into Royal Rumble time, which is when you start positioning your belts where you need them to be for WrestleMania. You So that means your September to December time, you know, historically we've had some perhaps unexpected people being given a chance to carry the title. So maybe Joe gets it. I mean, if Joe wins the title and then John Cena's going to Raw for a month, then maybe we get that John Cena versus Samoa Joe match that would... I'd love that. I'd love to see that.
It would be great. My pick has been the same from the very beginning. For me, it's Brock Lesnar. He's going to retain.
You think he's retaining?
Yep, that's what I think. I've thought.
Yeah,
it's,
I think that's likely.
Yeah, it's just always been my. I have this feeling that he retains. Now, let's talk before we kind of what we're going to have to do. Sorry, I'm going to have to put the Finn Balor interview on tomorrow because I don't have time to edit it before I go out.
Oh, but sorry, guys. I bumped Finn Balor off the card.
You bumped Finn Balor off. You've not had a chance to talk about this. We've got about 15 minutes here that we can go and talk about it. So there's one person who apparently might be in town that's The Undertaker. And before
yeah,
we talk, And before we talk about what he might be doing, etc.
Was he at Michael Moore?
I think he was one of the Trump protesters outside. But you never really got a chance to talk about WrestleMania with The Undertaker. What did you think of the maybe retirement or Roman Reigns defeating him, whatever it was?
Yeah, look, this, they've been so non-committal on the retirement that is not it. Okay, it just can't be. Like, if you think about even the definitive retirements that weren't, like Flair in 2008, Michaels in 2010, which was a definitive retirement, it was very much the case that this was it, and that was over. It was advertised as such, and I've always strongly held the belief that the final match of The Undertaker will be billed as such, and it will not be something that people assume because of things they've heard online. Like, The Undertaker is money, okay? He's money for that company. None of that money comes from the wallet of Sandra, but he's money. Most people like him. So, I never really sat well with me that it wasn't billed as his retirement match, okay? And then the match itself happened. Look, even on the night, I was like, fuck, this is, to quote JR, bowl and shoot ugly. Have you watched it back?
No, I've not really felt I've been able to yet.
Okay, right. So anyway, it's not good. Like, he's stumbling all around and sort of missing cues and stuff like that. And I don't know what it was like there live. I mean, obviously, that's how you guys experienced it. So maybe it felt a little bit different, but you know, it just—he sort of looked fucked, and he was by all accounts. You know, like from January to WrestleMania this year, all we kept hearing about was like, "Oh, he needs this done, he needs that done," and all this kind of stuff. So he looked kind of gubbed on the night, and I actually, of anything, I felt a little bit sorry for Roman, because Roman Reigns got a big WrestleMania main event with The Undertaker, which even Roman, who some people don't really, you know, some people hold it against him that it wasn't his first career choice. He didn't necessarily grow up dreaming of wrestling The Undertaker at WrestleMania. But I felt a little bit bad for him because it wasn't really that great a match. And I think that everything they did at the end, or everything he did, was fine. But it didn't really feel right watching it live. Like, I was like, is that him? Is he done? And then the end of the match kind of made it feel like, oh my, like this could be it. And then he started taking off his stuff, and that's sort of symbolically, you know, leaving the Undertaker in the ring. And I was just watching it kind of thinking, this is, I should be crying, right? To me, seeing the Undertaker retire, I should have tears in my eyes, like I did when I saw Ric Flair at 24 or Shawn Michaels at 26. Like, it should be something where I feel really emotional about it. And I felt a little bit cold because I just didn't think that it was presented exactly the correct way for him. Like, I mean, it was good, don't get me wrong, and I did laugh to myself because, in my mind, because I can't, you know, let a moment pass without being flippant. He starts to, you know, he's taking off the glove and the hat, and in my mind I kind of thought, well, fuck, what if he's taking off all of his clothes? And then once he had put down all of the stuff, he basically, like, he adjusts his belt and his trousers, like, with his hands, but I did thought, I was like, well, fucking hell, they're coming off too! Undertaker's going to be working in the nuds back up the ramp. And I just thought that the visual of the hat and the gloves and everything, the MMA gloves, sitting in the middle of the ring were fine. It was good, and then him going sort of down into the ring. But, I mean, did you really feel like that was the best they could do for that guy? And then nothing on Raw, and then all of this, he may have retired The Undertaker, which makes me feel like this was okay, we're going to go with this as a last-minute thing, because this might be it. But we're never going to say it definitely retired, just in case we're doing something else. And I felt like it was a trap door, like a get out clause. And that's what I felt when I was watching it. I felt like I was watching something that if he comes out and says, I'm definitely done, then that'll do. It's a bit like when, you know, like a TV series doesn't know if it's getting renewed. So they do like a last episode that sort of ties most things up and you're like, okay, if it had ended there, that would be fine, but I'm glad it came back, you know, for season four or whatever. Like, I think Buffy the Vampire Slayer had to do that like a number of times. Like, oh, this is the finale. Oh, no, wait, we'll come back next year. It's fine. So I think that's why I felt a little bit empty. I didn't feel like it was really the end for him. So, again, I think it's quite unpopular, but I'm sort of hoping they do have something else. And I don't even mean a match. It doesn't have to be a match. I just want a more sort of ceremonious, symbolic goodbye for him. And there's no way that they're feeding Michael Cole the may have retired line if it doesn't mean that he's going to come back and do something. He may not come back and wrestle, but he might come back for some type of thing.
Well, it's interesting you say that because Jim Ross was asked yesterday about this situation. Here's what he had to say to Nick Hossman, or Houseman, how do you pronounce it? He says, until he says he's done, he's not done. I think Vince McMahon is a marketing genius. He's not going to miss any opportunity to monetize and maximize this amazing investment in this legacy of The Undertaker. Until The Undertaker says he's done and is validated by the company, is signed off in that essence, for lack of a better term, I still say Undertaker is active and could return and wrestle at any time.
Yeah, it's a lot of, I mean, you think about, there's only been, if you think about Austin's retirement, you know, and nobody knew about it, and it wasn't really billed as such, and all that kind of stuff, but that still worked. That was still a really good match with The Rock at WrestleMania 19. So there was that. And I'm not saying The Undertaker's got one more classic in him or anything, because I think that, you know, that shit might have failed. But I don't know. I felt like I was watching it happen, you know, the hat, the gloves and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know what it was like in the crowd. Maybe like people were like really like crying and all that kind of stuff. But I was just kind of going, I should be moved by this, but I'm not, because I'm not, I don't think this is what I think he deserved more than just this, although this was fine, and I'm not totally convinced.
What's interesting about it is that this is now the second time, because I'm with you, I think he is coming back in some form, and I think that the thing that's interesting is we've now had two WrestleManias where Vince has done something thinking that he's done. Brock Lesnar, WrestleMania 30, he thought he was done. Roman Reigns this year, he thought he was done. So what I'd like to see, because it's funny, I was sitting with Sondra at WrestleMania, so there's no worse person to sit beside than somebody who hates the Undertaker.
Sondra's like, just put the hat down and fuck off.
Yeah, I know. But like, when I was sitting there, I was kind of going, like, I enjoyed the moment after the match.
I'm sorry to interrupt, I've never had this vision of like Sondra jumping the barricade and grabbing Taker's clothes so she can, like, pass it into the Goodwill. Give this shit to some homeless guy.
I enjoyed the moment after the match, but my issue was, I don't think the story was there for it to be his last match. I don't think the build was there. And, like, the problem is that I'm always going to compare, like, the build that Shawn Michaels had for his last match, Undertaker should have that as a minimum.
Yeah,
level.
Because the thing was, Shawn's was actually quite low-key compared to Flair's in terms... Like, the match was a big deal, and it was hyped as such, you know, his career was on the line. But, you know, they didn't do that thing for Michaels where they brought out everybody the next night from his, you know, his past, well, probably because, you know, Marty Jannetty's a mess. But, his was relatively low-key, but it worked for him, and by all accounts, that's kind of what he wanted. He didn't want that Flair sort of type-style ceremony, which is fine. But I just think that the idea that The Undertaker retired at WrestleMania and it was not billed as a match where his career was on the line or this was 100% his last match, they did not nearly wring the emotions out of that which they could for a whole generation of people. I think there were people who were gutted, you know, hashtag thank you Taker, blah blah blah, but I just...
Let me ask you this though.
Yeah.
Do you want to see him this weekend?
Like, is that an offer?
But what's the gut? What's the gut? What's
is this
the gut
like
reaction?
Blind date? You're still a black. You're going to pull back the curtain, and Undertaker's going to sweep me off my feet.
You're Undertaker up Aston Lane for a shandy.
Taking for the mac and cheese at Brill.
Oh my god, the one is so good. Anyway,
do I want to see him this weekend? I don't know. Like, I don't necessarily want to see the Roman Undertaker saga continue, so I don't know whether I want the bong to hit and then, you know, Taker's like, and he grabs Roman and takes him away from the match or something. Although that's entirely possible.
That'd be fucking great. That'd be so great.
I'd probably go with it. Yeah, I'd probably be quite happy with it. But yeah, I suppose I would quite like to see him. But it may not be in an active capacity. Like, maybe it's to announce the retirement and maybe they're going to do something for him. And like,
No way. Come on.
I'm not saying that. I just think that this guy should have the legit biggest retirement in wrestling. He has to. Like, you know, there are so many things. I mean, he lasted for so long. He took a gimmick that nobody else could have made work. Jesus Christ. You know, guy that makes coffins for cowboys. Fuck's sake. Somehow manages to turn that into like a 40-year career plan. So, not 40 years, what am I talking about? But I don't know. I'd love to see him. I'd love to see him turn up this weekend. But I just hope that there's a plan in place. I don't want it to be too open-ended. I'm very keen to see, because I think we are, you know, if that wasn't his retirement, we can't be far off the real deal. And I want to see it done properly. And I'm not really, I mean, if what happened at WrestleMania was it, okay.
Here's what I want. Like, all joking aside, you know, Sondra never really gets why we love The Undertaker. You know, like, because she's never really seen it. And when she's watching Retro Raw, she gets it more. And I'd love for there to be a story that's so good for him that at the end, even people like Sondra or people who aren't that invested in The Undertaker go, that was really good though. You know? Because he deserves to go out on something that good. He deserves to go out. For all the stuff that anybody's ever done, how long has that guy been there? All the stuff he's went through, all the gimmicks, all the money he's made them, all the tickets he sold them. He saved two WrestleManias for me that would have been a fucking waste of money going to had he not had killer matches on them. So,
yeah.
I hope he turns up. It doesn't have to be this weekend, but I hope that he does something, and I hope it's not shite. It's the key.
Yeah.
Please don't be shite.
I didn't love the retirement at WrestleMania, but I would rather that was the full stop than, you know, the dreaded run-on sentence, which could happen this weekend. But yeah. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to... Well, actually, I'll probably not be able to watch it because of my internet woes. I don't know what I'm going to do there, but I'm sure I'll figure something out.
So, Robert, thank you for returning, I guess. I guess I need to say that now.
Careful when you put pen to pizza book, my friend.
Never doing it again. Ever in my life. That's why you shouldn't, eat carbs. You never know what can happen. Robert, where can people find you on Twitter now that you're allowed to use your name again?
The deepest, darkest recesses of Twitter. You can get me at Bertie_ITR. That's at BERTIE_ITR.
And Robert and I very soon are going to do a Patreon podcast for, I think it's for Gus, and it's on the Shawn Michaels Chris Jericho feud.
Gus.
Because Gus does want us to do that, so we are going to do that very, very soon.
Great feud. We will do it soon. The internet thing that I alluded to, it's hopefully going to be resolved relatively soon. So that we can do that and some other stuff, and hopefully I was going to put a date on it, but I'm not going to because fuck knows what BT will do next. But hopefully it'll be solved soon enough for us to get that thing done for Gus and some other stuff.
So yeah, I'm off to NXT TakeOver. Robert's going to be watching it as well, and we hope you have a great SummerSlam weekend. Sondra and David and I will all be back tomorrow to talk TakeOver Brooklyn 3 and the fallout from it. So thanks for listening, everybody. And Robert, what song do you want to play us out?
Oh. Can you play... I will dedicate this song to my Hollywood elite brother.
For fuck's sake.
David J. McCutcheon. A band I know he loves and I love too. Temptation by New Order, please. This one's for David J.
This one's
the ultimate temptation for men and women everywhere.
For fuck's sake. Oh god, I wish I could be euthanized. Here's New Order. Bye.
Oh, you've got green eyes. Oh, you've got blue.